I had a fairly simple back-to-basics sermon written for this weekend. It's summer, and I used the lectionary reading. If you're familiar with the lectionary, it's a collection of the Bible stories that lead us through our church year. So that's where we get the idea of Christmas and then Easter, and then we have Pentecost, and then we have some ordinary time. We have some special events along the way. And the lectionary is that guide that directs churches along the way. And when we use the lectionary, we are in step with many of our surrounding brothers and sisters that are in church right now too. So Methodists and Episcopalians and Lutherans and Catholics, a whole lot of other folks use the lectionary. And so it's kind of fun. You're out later and you say, what did your pastor talk about? And they said, well, we all talked about the Good Samaritan, and you can kind of compare notes. So I had this kind of basic sermon worked up, and then all hell broke loose early in the week. And then all hell broke loose some more. And so I did a lot of praying. And I wrote a couple of other drafts. And I read a whole bunch of prayers and statements, including one by our own denomination, the Disciples of Christ. And I thought about what I might do differently with the sermon. And I kept coming back to this. What could you add to this conversation with another big sweeping statement? We all know that human slavery, the sin of human slavery, and I use that very specifically, predates our country. It came to this place that we are way before we were even a country. It has been here for hundreds of years, and the results of that still haunt us. We all know that, and yet, bluntly, as a society, we kind of do those things to fix that in a half-hearted way. Same thing with the first responder question. Everybody knows that all first responders run into dangerous and difficult situations. That, by the way, includes my little brother. He's not little anymore, but my little brother. And they are wonderful, and the huge vast majority of them do the right thing in difficult circumstances at the right time. And that there will always be people who make bad decisions for whatever reason. That's not limited, by the way, to any particular vocation. I want to point out that in the last couple of weeks, two local churches, not ours or anybody we're associated with, but two local churches have had some fairly major scandals here in the Kansas City area. So this is not limited to any one group or any one vocation. So we all know that. And we all know that mentally ill people here and around the world have guns and bombs and cars and God knows what, and they do awful, terrible things that we can't fathom because we're not mentally ill, right? So we all know that. And I'm sure that many pastors today are going to preach very eloquent sermons on all this, and God love them, more power to them. But I decided that we didn't need another sweeping statement. I love those game day fire 'em up speeches that coaches give, But what I have known about this is if the team isn't prepared, if they don't know the plays, if they don't know what to do, if they haven't practiced, if they don't know the little techniques that are the difference between winning and losing, then a big speech isn't going to get the job done. So I went back to my original sermon, which is about working the basics and taking small steps. When we hear the Good Samaritan, which, like I say, if you've been in church like I have all my life, you probably haven't memorized, which kind of makes it dangerous because we kind of skip over important parts. There are really three parts. The first is the restatement of the great commandments. Love God, love your neighbor. And you hear that again in Mark's gospel and Matthew's gospel. And they come from the great Jewish tradition, Deuteronomy, Leviticus. Very clear. So that's the first part. The second part is the illustration, the parable. And the third part then is that last line, the sending. Over much of our lives, probably, sermons have tended to focus on that middle section where the stranger, somebody that we aren't expecting, turns out to be the neighbor. That was Jesus, as with all of his parables, kind of turning the apple cart upside down, causing some discomfort among his hearers then, and oftentimes his parables cause us some discomfort too. They're designed to get us to think about the question differently. Jesus has gone out of his way to remind us that sometimes it is the stranger that we need to meet and discover to have a new experience of God, especially as we have tried to adapt to the global age, which has been very, very hard for all of us, I think, Americans, and especially after the 9/11 tragedy. There's been a tendency to cast that Samaritan as the Muslim in society so that people would be more comfortable with working with and living around Muslims. And that has advantages and disadvantages. But I want to shift our focus to the first part where we hear again that great formula, love God and love your neighbor, that's restated over and over and over again in the scriptures. You note that the lawyer gives the right answer, and Jesus responds, "You have given the right answer. Do this, and you will live." And at the end of the parable, we hear that right answer restated again in a slightly different way. Jesus says, "Who is the neighbor?" And the lawyer says, "The one who showed him mercy." And Jesus repeats the instruction. Jesus said to him, "Go and do likewise. Do this, and you will live. Go and do likewise." I think the words for that day on Jesus' planner must have been go and do. Note that everyone in the parable and in the story, in the larger story that the parable set in, knows the right answer. Not everyone goes to do what is right. Jesus says that in the doing, we are a part of his way of life, not only in the next life, but also in this one. It is in the doing that we discover delightfully often that the stranger can be a friend. It is in the doing, the going, that we discover that God's mercy and compassion is universal, not only for other people, but for us. It is in the going and the doing that we actualize our God-given potential through the power of the Holy Spirit. On Sunday, we're supposed to pause for a minute here in church and look back over the last week and be grateful and maybe have some prayers. And we're also supposed to look ahead to the next week. What I hear Jesus saying to us in this scripture for the next week is go and do. Now, you're probably already doing lots of things. Maybe what Jesus is saying is take a step back and say, what am I doing to address some of these issues in our world and perhaps in my life? What am I doing that I could do differently, more intentionally, to take some extra prayer time with the doing? And if you don't have something, you know, if you're called to something new, perhaps, and oftentimes that's the case, you know, somebody says, well, I want to do something new. Well, there are plenty of opportunities here. We need somebody to help us organize Grace at Work in October. We have Jerusalem Farm. You can go with us to Nicaragua. I mentioned that earlier. You can go down to Hartman here and teach little kids when school reopens. There are tons of opportunities. By the way, those are all real opportunities. Those are not just, that's just not a list. If you are interested in any of those, see me. Those are all real. But to go and to do and to think about how we're doing what we do prayerfully and intentionally and in God's Spirit. I can't tell you what you should do, by the way. If you say, oh, Joe, what should I do? I've got no answer for that because I don't know you and all your, you know, all of your gifts and talents and experiences and time. I don't know that. Fortunately, we all know somebody who does know that and knows where you're supposed to be going. So you're welcome to take that question upstairs. And if you want to get a cup of coffee and talk about it and discern, I would love to do that part of it with you. But the answer is coming from up top. I'm keenly aware that I am limited in what I know, and it keeps me humble. Many, many years ago, the only other large congregation I ever served in was mostly white, but there were some African-American and some Latino families there. And one of my really good black friends came up at one day after church, and he says, I know you're really trying hard. And I'm going, uh-oh. And he said, when you talk about race and those things, you always talk from an exclusively white perspective, and that unintentionally, I'm sure, excludes all the rest of us. And I said, ouch, I'm trying so hard, but you know what? He was absolutely right. Seth Godin, who's actually a marketing guy that I follow, has a wonderful quote about that. He says, empathy requires something extremely difficult, accepting the fact that you are not and never will be in the other person's shoes. So I don't know what you need to do, and I don't know what would be helpful for you. I can share what I do, first on the big picture, because we don't want to not take big opportunities to address the big issues. So we want to be in a position to do that. And I advocate for things like, you know, public transit and safer housing and police and fire coverage and all those kinds of things. The public schools, all those kinds of things. When we have an opportunity to advance those conversations and to take action on the big social issues, we all need to be involved in that, I believe, and I do that. I try and do that. Those issues are never easy. Those fixes are never easy, but they are doable. And I also keep my eyes open for every little opportunity to be neighbor. I smile at people. I say good morning or good afternoon or whatever. I try and make eye contact, especially with those people that sometimes it's easy not to notice. Everybody in the service economy, and by the way, everybody in the service economy is making below a living wage. They are literally starving so that we can have cheap goods and services. So, everybody in the service economy, and those oftentimes are minorities or people with special needs. So I try and smile. I just try and make eye contact to try and make this face somebody who's less stranger. My prayer is always, Lord, help me see opportunities to be neighbor. And as with the big ones, also not to miss even the smallest opportunities. The other night, it was about 10 o'clock. I'd been here, and I left, and I stopped out at the Price Chopper by my house. And it's a mixed-race neighborhood. And, of course, it's 10 o'clock at night. Everybody wants to be at Price Chopper in the grocery line, right? You know, that's the place to be at 10 o'clock. And I had my stuff on the conveyor belt. And out of the corner of my eye, I saw an African-American man about my age rolling his cart out behind me. And I just looked over and smiled, and I grabbed all my stuff and shoved it forward and put the divider in there and smiled and went like that. There you go. Made you some space. Now, he probably didn't even notice that I was trying to be nice. We will probably never see each other again. I didn't do anything to fix structural racism. But I believe with all my heart that every gesture, small or great, that we do out of trying to answer Jesus' call to be neighbor, I believe that every gesture helps bring God's children together and realize that kingdom of peace and justice which God intends and which Jesus taught us to help with. Go and do likewise, Jesus said. This week, let us go and do likewise.